Hey, everybody, and welcome to episode 252 of Tender World Report Connectivity. I'm your host, Neil Ronahan, and joining me, as potentially always now, John Raritan.
Probably always, hopefully always, ideally always.
Yeah, most likely always. Always be my maybe. I don't know.
Something like that.
Joining us this week is our first guest of the new era. It's Matt Zawadniak.
That's me.
Yeah, Matt, were you ever on an episode of Old Connectivity?
I don't think so. Something was...
Because I'm...
It is traditional to take off your pants at the beginning of the episode.
Oh, I'm way ahead of you there.
Okay, good.
But
I've been working from home, man.
For some reason, I feel like there must have been like some offshoot thing, maybe, but I don't recall ever actually being.
Yeah, like I mean, there was a while there where it was a little loosey goosey. Like there was.
Whereas now it's rigid and structured.
Weekly.
I'm looking at it now. October 1st, 2018 was the last regular episode, and that was like as I was joining staff.
Yeah. Like I'll give all the credit in the world to one Nick Bray, who was the previous caretaker of the podcast. Like he did a lot of great stuff, and then it just kind of I think life got in the way for him, and then it just started to kind of peter out as it will, and then we're here to hopefully bring him back. We will definitely have Nick on. Sometime in the future. I'm basically working on trying to go through and just get people who used to be involved with connectivity and also like Matt, other Nintendo World Report staffers, get people on talking about video games. If you have any feedback, which I don't think we got any last week, send an email to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. We did confirm the email is still live.
It does exist.
Yes. So before we kind of get into talking about like what we've been playing, and we've got some feature topics about retail pre-order debacles and Nintendo shutting down the world, let's go with something that's going to be easily disproven, because as we are recording, we are, 24 hours away from the Game Awards or the Jeff Keighley Awards, or for some reason, Chris Nolan and Gal Gadot are presenters, and like... I guess Reggie's technically the video game luminary that's presenting, and I guess people who make video games just aren't important.
On the bright side, Eddie Vedder's going to be there.
That is, you know what? That is the one thing that make it all better.
Saw that, and I was like, dang it, I have to watch it. I wouldn't have watched it for potential Nintendo announcements, but Eddie Vedder being there,
I saw that might be worth it. Oh, we're not restreaming this year, are we?
No.
Funny thing,
I'm sure
with
he's
Eddie
doing
Vedder,
like a song from Persona or something stupid.
That was Last of Us.
Oh my god!
He had something to do with Last of Us.
That makes sense.
Oh yeah. I forgot about that. But Eddie Vedder, with him, I think he's from the Chicago area, if memory serves me correctly.
Yeah, he is.
But he's played near Green Bay, and like Packer fans or Packer players have hung out with him and like given him Packer jerseys, which I think pissed off the Chicago fans a lot, which I don't know, warms my heart. I could bring everything back to the Green Bay Packers.
Listen,
including Eddie Vedder.
When a man meets Eddie Vedder, he gives him gifts, and it doesn't matter where he's from. It's just the way it goes when you meet a beautiful man like Eddie Vedder.
Or if he's probably worth more than Eddie Vedder, because I think Aaron Rodgers was one of the people who met Eddie Vedder.
Nobody,
it all happened.
Nobody is worth more than Eddie Vedder in my heart.
but so we're by the time you hear this, we're going to be going up on Friday. The Game Awards will be done. So
I hope so. They tend to go on for a long time. So hopefully they'll be done. I've stayed up and watched those before. They might still be going.
Depending on when this release is on Friday, they very well may not.
Yeah.
So let's go around the horn kind of real quick and just think. Let's do two predictions that will already be disproven by the time everybody listens to this. One that you think is in the realm of possibility, and one that you think is like you'd love to see but is completely insane. John, let's start with you.
Well, within the realm of possibility, and not even within the realm of possibility, but what's absolutely going to happen is there will not be a single Nintendo-related announcement, not even like a Cranky Kong announcement. There will be nothing from Nintendo at this event.
I can get behind that.
And then for extremely outlandish, but something that would be awesome, let's say Star Wars Republic Commando is coming exclusively to Switch as a shadow drop at the Game Awards.
I'm in favor of that. All right, Matt, how about you?
Oh, God. Oh, man, I am, like, kind of so off the pulse right now of, like, what we're kind of...
What, like, mine was on the pulse? Man, you really called it.
And a dream Star Wars game.
Yeah.
Oh, geez. I kind of agree with you that I don't think there's going to be anything from Nintendo.
Yeah. With how well they've handled this year so far, there's no way they have anything hidden and ready to go.
Yeah. And, like, honestly, even before it accidentally got posted, Persona 5 Strikers was kind of like my prediction for, like, oh, this could be the big thing that they go out with. So I guess maybe Ratchet and Clank gets a release date. That's kind of like the missing part of the PS5.
Yeah. Then Keeley also did like the first gameplay of that or something like that.
Yeah.
For Summer Game Fest.
Yeah. So I feel like, I think I'm going to go with that, actually, because the PS5 launch, that's kind of like the missing link right now. It got pushed back and now we don't really know when it's going to be. So I'd say that's a decently realistic choice.
I like that.
For the out there prediction, though, I have a brand. And that brand is Yakuza Ishin finally gets localized.
So, which one is that?
That is the one that takes place in the Meiji era. Starring Saito Hajime.
I'd play that. I don't even like Yakuza, and I'd play that.
It is like the number one thing that it's like, please, we need this game localized. And every single time it gets brought up in an interview with someone involved in Yakuza, they just go, yes, we know. And I feel like, you know, Yakuza is big now. It's just had a very
now
big
the
release,
time.
Multi-platform and all that. Like, come on, let's teach have to, Japanese like, history.
They'd have to remaster it, though, like they did with the they couldn't just do a Wii U release first two.
It was a PS4 launch title. They could just put it out on PS4. That's
was
fine.
It? I thought that was a PS3 game.
Oh, yeah. No, the Kenzan was PS3. No one ever talks about Kenzan. But Ishin, it was specifically to give the development team some experience practicing on the PS4.
Huh. And
interesting.
So I...
Well, okay.
All you got to do is just put it right here on PS4 with some English subtitles. I mean,
well, they're not going to put it on PS4 at this point.
I mean,
well, they're going to put it on their favorite system, the Xbox Series X.
I mean, it could be the kind of thing where it comes to PS4 and they like it's. I mean, it's also compatible with PS5.
Yeah,
I demand it come. I demand that all Yakuza games are timed exclusives to the Series X for this generation.
And I guess
we've set a precedent.
Going by what you know, Microsoft and Sega seem to be with the series, maybe it comes to Xbox as well.
But like, I just feel like it's time, because you know, another company may or may not have decided that it's time for a game set in the Meiji era.
Yeah, which company
is
that?
Daigakuten Saibon.
Okay. Oh. Yeah. I was actually thinking about that. Of like, hey, there's. Oh wait, no. Let's not talk about that.
Yeah.
Anyway, my picks real quick. Mine in the realm of possibility is something that will probably irritate you, Matt. I think it's in the realm of possibility that there will be a Smash Brothers character announced during the Game Awards.
I mean, I don't mind if they announce a character. I just am tired.
It's not tied to what, you know, the chatter on the internet is. It's just that if you look at it, what they have six characters total from this pack. Clearly COVID kind of, I guess, shuffle or at least, you know, pushed back things a little bit, because they had Min Min came out in June, and then they had Steve was October. Right. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Time's hard to track these days. But they're supposed to have six total by the end of next year, which, you know, there's a chance that maybe that gets shuffled back a little bit because, you know, unprecedented times and all. But I think that this would be a good time for them to announce the next character, whether or not it comes out right away. Maybe it's something that maybe they announce the character now and it's out in January or February. But they have four characters left. They have, you know, a little over a year to, you know, announce and release all of them. So I kind of expect that, like, you know, even if there's not a Smash character revealed during the Game Awards, I think there's a Smash character revealed by January. It's gonna happen soon. And my out there pick is we see footage of Metroid Prime 4.
That is pretty out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, they're just kind of about like,
be starting to make that game at this point.
Yeah.
Retro spent the last year redesigning that logo. They're like, well, we can't possibly go with this. This doesn't represent our vision. There's
probably been a lot of carryover. Maybe people from 343 went down to Retro and were like, hey, do you want to put a game out quickly? Well, guess what? Don't.
That's why Halo Infinite was delayed. Because so many 343 employees are working at Retro.
I'll revise this. My out there pick is that what's the guy's name I forget the exact name of the guy at Nintendo who did the Metroid Prime 4 is going to Retro. That guy will come out on stage or whatever they're doing and just be like, so we had more development trouble with Metroid Prime 4. The new developers are Bungie. And then
every 2 years.
Okay, no, they just start over. I know exactly what's going to happen. So Halo Infinite just got delayed to fall 2021, right? So that is exactly when Metroid Prime 4 is going to come out. Because at this point, I just think Nintendo can't help themselves.
Or it's the same game.
Yeah. Halo Infinite. It's Metroid. Yeah. They will reveal the name to just be called Halo Metroid Prime 4.
Infinite.
Yeah.
There's a colon and a... Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen Halo Infinite and Metroid Prime 4 in the same place at the same time?
Yeah, in that fan animation from the guy that made Ruby. It's like suddenly the entire decade that Ruby's been running gets validated.
I hope everybody is laughing.
Issue a correction on myself. I apologize. Yakuza Ishin does not take place during the Meiji era. It takes place during the Bakumatsu era. I confused myself because Ishin translates to restoration, and I was thinking of the Meiji restoration. You know, it happens to all of us.
Yep. Happens to the best of us.
I only know these words from Kenshin and have no other.
I mean, the main character of Yakuza Ishin is in Kenshin. So all I'm saying.
Oh.
So let's go from talking about Japanese history and let's start talking about Greek mythology. As you do, you jostle between the two. Team so Greek. John and Matt, you have both been playing Immortals Phoenix Rising. Matt, you reviewed it. John, I think you're playing it on Switch, right, John?
Yeah.
Yeah. So when you bought it and you sent me an apology.
Yeah. Well, OK, so here's the thing that I don't know if this is clear about me, if you don't interact with me on a regular basis. But when I see like a really big, ambitious game and then someone goes, we're going to make that run on the least common denominator, I go, cool. That's the version I want.
I can respect that.
I live for just weirdly ambitious and probably bad ports of games. So the idea of this game on Switch is exactly what I want. It's also a game that so directly rips off a Switch game that it feels weird to play it anywhere else. I want to be able to hold it in very direct comparison with Breath of the Wild. I don't want, the system difference to get in the way.
In fairness, I don't know if I would say that Immortals is like a very ambitious game. I just think the port's bad.
Yes. Yeah.
It seems like it's not the focus to like the Switch. Like, and it's frustrating because I think I remember when I saw Gods and Monsters first announced the other year and I was like, oh, cool. Like Ubisoft is going to focus on a Switch game. And they certainly did not.
It's like they're afraid. So I thought the same thing. And I'll be interesting to see sales numbers on Immortals. Hopefully it's not this bad. But it reminds me a bit of Starlink, where you can look at this game and say, all right, clearly the Switch version is going to be the version with the most audience. Maybe this should just be a Switch game.
Especially, it came out weeks after Assassin's Creed Valhalla and Watch Dogs Legion. Ubisoft basically put out, three, and, I know there's different markets that appeal to those three, but at heart, it's just three open-world Ubisoft games.
Yeah.
And they're all in the same system, whereas Immortals is only on one of them.
Yeah. Interestingly, same engine as Valhalla. So if you ever wanted to know how Valhalla would run on Switch.
Answer, not great.
Oh, no, I don't think it. No, not at all.
I mean, Valhalla apparently doesn't run great on the Series X. So like,
I mean, that's
I've heard some horrifying things about that game's performance on PC.
That's par for Ubisoft at launch, though. I mean, Assassin's Creed Unity wasn't exactly a gleaming diamond.
Apparently, I've actually heard from some people that like Unity's the one to go back to on Xbox.
I've heard I have a coworker who has been looking for 360 and Xbox One games that ran poorly and is playing them on Series X. He did Dynasty Warriors 9, which apparently just runs like a dream on Series X.
Yeah, because that was like, didn't Dynasty Warriors 9, that's the game that like killed the franchise.
That's the open world one.
Yeah. Where it was really ambitious, it just ran so poorly at launch. Yeah. That they're like, no, we're just going to do these licensed ones now. That's
I think it's a little early to say it killed the franchise because it was only 2018. But also, like,
that's true.
Like, wow, that game was
not well received.
Yeah, like, I'm looking at it on Steam right now. It has mostly negative reviews.
Yeah. And it seems like you got to work for those sometimes. But like, as someone who loves Breath of the Wild and has enjoyed a Ubisoft open world game from time to time, should I bother with Immortals at all?
I would say it's more worth your time for enjoying Ubisoft games than for enjoying Breath of the Wild. Because it takes very clear inspirations from Breath of the Wild. But like the way that I've been describing it is that like there are some things in Breath of the Wild that I really did not like. It's a complicated game for me where it's like it's one of my favorite games that's ever been made. But also some parts of it I just think are bad. And those parts most noticeably for me are the combat and the shrines. And these are two things that Immortals does really well. And all of the stuff that I love about Breath of the Wild, like the open world exploration, the fact that the world is something that I actually learn my way around instead of just like following a map all the time, Immortals fails at that stuff. And I overall still do like Immortals a lot. Because I do like Ubisoft games and I really like Greek mythology. So I think the story is really fun.
The story and writing are easily the best parts for me.
Yeah. But I think that if you're here thinking I could do with another Breath of the Wild, let's try out Immortals. I really think that you'll end up disappointed. Like, honestly, I don't even really like I would say that if you want another Breath of the Wild, you should sooner go for Genshin Impact, which I dropped off that game real hard, and I still think that it captures the Breath of the Wild spirit better.
I would almost say that
supposed to come to Switch. I really want Genshin Impact to actually come to Switch because right now, it's only like PS4 and mobile phones,
and PC.
My PS4 is broken.
The PC version is difficult, I'll say.
I'm looking forward to Genshin Impact to come to Switch. Like, I'll probably check it out there, even if I. Just because of the free-to-play nature of it, I imagine I will fall off kind of hard, but I just want to see it.
It's an extremely low barrier to entry, so, and it's, like, it's the big thing right now. I said, I do like Immortals a lot. I don't think that it scratches that Breath of the Wild itch. It's your typical Ubisoft open-world game, but better than that. And I
like it as, when I think of it more of, like, Assassin's Creed Odyssey, but with even more Breath of the Wild influences rather than a Breath of the Wild clone, I tend to like it better because I really like Assassin's Creed Odyssey, and that game takes more than a few things from Breath of the Wild as well.
Didn't Odyssey come out the same year as Breath of the Wild?
I was thinking
it was close, wasn't
2018
it? Or was Origins 2017?
I was thinking Odyssey was 18, but I could be wrong.
Yeah.
Odyssey has many similarities, whether intentional or just parallel thinking.
Yeah, that's what, because I I could look up the timeline too. I think Breath of the Wild was March 2017. That I know for sure. Mm-hmm. I think Origins was 2017 and then Odyssey was 2018. But I would say that Odyssey definitely follows in the footsteps of Origins, which I've actually played both of those. I got really far in Origins and like messed around with Odyssey. Odyssey's there for me to play at some point.
Origins
Odyssey definitely grabbed me much more than Origins did.
Yeah. What happened to me is that I got Origins and Odyssey in a 2-pack and was super into Origins and was like, oh, like I just want to see what Odyssey's like because people said it's kind of better. And then that was around the time when it was like, everybody at Ubisoft touches and harasses everybody else at Ubisoft. So then I just was like, maybe I don't want to play this game right now.
Yeah.
But it's there. Like, I still have both of them. I got it for like $20, which is ridiculous for how much content there is.
Which, boy, those developments sure run in contrast to Immortal's story.
Yeah, it's a very positive plot line.
It's, I mean, there's like a meta narrative to it of like Zeus realizing that he's kind of been a horrible person to like the rest of the Pantheon, especially his children.
So there's two meta narratives. There's that, and then Zeus really wanting to sleep with Achilles. And I enjoy both of them equally. But no, I'm enjoying it. I know, Matt, you had it crash on you like 8 times during the review.
Oh, yeah.
I had it fail to knock off a quest once I had already finished it, and then autosave beyond that point. So I had to go back to a manual save from 3 hours ago and replay a huge segment of the game, which was awesome.
Yeah, I have not played since I finished the review because I fell into this. I really want to go back in 100% Age of Calamity kind of mindset.
Yeah.
But like, yeah,
I might do that
during the review period. Like, yeah, it crashed like 8 times total.
Yeah. And one thing I will say, I haven't messed with it, but it looks like it has an online save system so that you can load your save up in another version.
Yeah,
so you could get a better version
across everything. Like, I know Matt was lamenting about how he's like, I kind of wish I had this game on not Switch.
Yeah.
And then I saw out there on the wilds of the internet that, yeah, with Immortals, like you can, if you, I mean, you have to sign up for Ubisoft Connect or whatever, but then you can move that save to any other console that the game's on.
Yeah,
which is like,
I kind of wish
that's how
that
everything should work.
I wish that I had known that when I was writing the review, because like I said in the review, like, boy, yeah, I wish I could move my save file elsewhere.
We'll just pretend that button wasn't there yet.
Yeah.
That was,
I mean,
the patch,
it definitely was. I made an online save without realizing what it was. But yeah, did this game not release on PC? What?
Did it not?
It didn't.
It's not on Steam.
That's weird.
That's strange.
I know it's on Stadia. Like, maybe there's some kind of, I don't know.
They have the exclusive
Stadia. Epic? Is it on Epic?
I don't know. It must be Epic exclusive, isn't it? Oh, jeez.
It could be. It's hard to keep up with all the PC exclusivity stuff.
Yeah. Wikipedia says it's on Windows, so I don't know.
Yeah.
It's on the Windows Store.
So, speaking of highly technical games with, you know, online cross saves and everything, I don't know. And I'm just going to talk about Puyo Puyo Tetris 2, which is now out on Nintendo Switch and I think like every other system too. I think it's on like Xbox and PlayStation junk. But I reviewed Puyo Puyo Tetris 2 and it's more Puyo Puyo Tetris.
Good.
Yeah. I guess like the big new thing is there's this RPG battle mode that I think, so Sega's marketing seems a little not above board. Because they talk about, like, there's an open world for you to explore. Like, kind of imply it, and it's like people reported it like that, and, like, no one was there to be like, hey, that's not really what it is. Like, the adventure mode in Puyo Puyo Tetris 2 is a little bit more, there's a little bit more, like, exploring, but it's still, like, just a world map where you're going from, like, puzzle room to puzzle room. Which is fine because that original adventure was really fun to romp through. And just like this one, the new adventure mode is really fun to romp through. The RPG stuff comes in this mode called Skill Battle, which is kind of weird to figure out. But once you figure it out, it's really cool. So you pick 3 characters and you can like level up these characters. And you can also have different item cards to give you other boosts while you play. And there's also abilities that you can use during the game. So it'll be like, you know, like clear the bottom row or, you know, change a certain thing to a certain color, stuff like that. And that all is tied to like an MP meter that you can then use to you can recharge as you complete lines and, you know, clear Puyos away and stuff like that. But you're not actually trying to like clear the other thing and fill up the other person's screen. you're just trying to whittle down their health. So you're kind of competing and while keeping an eye on your health bar and your opponent's health bar. And it, you know, kind of made me rejigger my brain a little bit to figure out like, okay, no, like this isn't the goal that I'm used to in this kind of game, which is really cool. But at the end of the day, the best part of Puro Puro Tetris 2 is, you know, just the more traditional puzzle stuff. I didn't get to go into it too much because I, you know, reviewed it and the embargo was before the game came out. There's a lot of online stuff there. And considering how strong the online was in Puyo Puyo Tetris 1 and Puyo Puyo Champions, which was Sega's release from, I think it was a year or two ago, that was mostly like, it was basically Puyo Puyo, the esports version. Those online modes all worked great. And when I kind of popped into them while I was playing Puyo Puyo Tetris 2, they're still pretty active. So I'm heartened to think that Puyo Puyo Tetris 2 is going to have a pretty good community, and they have different online leagues for Puyo by itself, Tetris by itself, like the fusion stuff, skill battle. It's like there's so many different leagues that you can compete in there, which is awesome. And I wish I could, you know, like see friends, because the local play seems like it would be really fun. But that's Puyo Puyo Tetris 2. Do any of you guys have any questions about the Puyo Puyo Tetris 2?
And you said like explore a wide open world, and I really want to see someone try to make an open world Tetris game now. I don't think it'd be good, but I want to see it.
Well, you could have there be like shrines, and you go in and you have to clear a Tetris board.
I think that would be like there's a potential for that. Not to go on a total sidebar here. It's been fun watching people experiment with the Picross format and like applying it to different games, because you had Murder by Numbers, which was basically Ace Attorney but with Picross, which was like, it was just a really good accent for going through an Ace Attorney game where you'd have a lot of dialogue, a lot of like, you know, inquiring people trying to solve puzzles, and then it would just be like, go solve a Picross puzzle and clear up this messy image and stuff like that. And like that was a great use of it. You had Pixel Puzzle Makeout League, which was a dating sim where you would play Picross, and it's almost way more of a dating sim than I kind of would like, but it was still a really good game. And some of the dating sim stuff is like out there and weird and really fun. And then there's a Pixley, P-I-C-Z-L-E. I don't think I've ever actually said it out loud, but Pixley Color Adventures, where that is kind of an open world Picross game where like you level up and stuff. And that's where you're like walking around this overworld, and it's kind of, you know, it's not quite like old 8-bit graphics or anything, but it does have that look of like, oh, I'm like walking around an RPG town. And you'll just go up to different items that, you know, like look a little fuzzy, and then you solve a Picross puzzle. And there will be ones that will be like, you know, different levels. You'll get experience points for doing it. That game was really neat. And I feel like there's a potential for doing that kind of more open worldy RPG stuff with Tetris. I mean, we've seen it with Puzzle Quest in the past. I feel like the match 3 stuff in Puzzle Quest from years ago hasn't aged quite as well as it, like, as fresh as it felt when it came out in like 2007 or whatever. That actually is out on Switch, the original Puzzle Quest. They did like a remake of it. I reviewed it. I don't actually remember what my score was, but it was probably like a 7.
10 out of 10.
Yeah, 10 out of 10. Everything's a 10. That's the Neil motto.
Typical Neil.
But I, yeah, no, give me an open world Tetris game. Like, that sounds really cool. I feel like just make it where it's a fusion of every type of puzzle game into one. And so like, it's like Oblivion, where you have or like Elder Scrolls games where there's different factions. So like you can get into the Picross faction or the Tetris faction or the Dr. Mario faction. Like there's all these like effed up doctors being like, we got to throw these pills into people, blow up the viruses. Dr. Robotnik
mean bean machine faction.
Yeah. Yeah, and you have, like, the Puyo region is just, like, this unholy hodgepodge of all the different versions of Puyo Puyo. And, like, there's a Puzzle League one where there's just, like, a really confused settlement there where they're like, that we once were Tetris, I don't know.
The Puyo region should have the throwback and reverse shout-out of, like, you finish one of the puzzles and it just throws you into a level of Sonic Mania.
We have to go deeper.
Yeah, I'll start mapping this game out as a dream game, because I'm now picturing just like you are going around the map in an Elder Scrolls game, But instead of like going to a town, like there's a lizard person, it's just a person who's like, hey man, like you want to do this Sudoku? Man, it's still a lizard person. They're just really into Sudoku. That's the lizard people motto. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess it is very late. Like I have 3 matchsticks. How can you make a bridge out of this? But yeah, Puyo Puyo Tetris 2 is a good game. Very good game. I'm also in the process of reviewing Pixel Junk Eden 2, which, did either of you play the first Pixel Junk Eden?
I have not.
Nope.
So I was talking to John about this, and I guess, you know what, y'all can read between the lines, but Pixel Junk Eden 1, I believe it came out when I was in the middle of college, and I might have participated in some things in college that would have made Pixel Junk Eden way cool. Because that game is basically just like, here's some techno beats, and you like are this little thing called a grimp, and you're going around collecting pollen to like unlock these different items, and there's like a loose time limit, but it's basically just like explore, live in the music, and go. And that was Pixel Junk Eden. I had really great memories of Pixel Junk Eden. I have not played it in a very long time, but I was still nonetheless excited when Pixel Junk Eden 2 was announced. Playing Pixel Junk Eden 2, which there will be a full review up either when this goes live or shortly after then. The game comes out on December 10th, so it's shortly after we record this. It's really good. It is. They made more Pixel Junk Eden, and it's really fun to just hop into that you know, techno electro planktony world, and just control a grimp and like jump around on leaves and branches and stuff and collect pollen and get the pollen to open up seeds that give you more plants so you can climb higher and get closer to the spectra. And then when you collect the spectra, you beat the level and then they give you more levels to play.
All those words made sense.
Yeah. So if fans of the genre will love Pixel Junk Eden 2.
so long as you've been doing lots of stuff to make the game cool.
Yeah.
And of course, by that, I mean reading your Bible.
Yes. Yes.
Don't worry, Neil. It's almost legal in Jersey.
Almost. We're almost there. But anyway, like, yeah, I mean, it's good either way. It's good. It's good sober. It's good not sober. Pixel Junk Eden 2. Back the box quote. although, actually, I can't. I mean, maybe give me some time. I'll report back on how Pixel Junk Eden is, too, when you're not sober. Because so far I've only played it sober.
I want, like, a month from now, a really poorly written second review to just hit the site at, like, 3 a.m.
Yeah.
And it's just like hey, oh, man. My God, guys, I was so wrong. It's perfect.
You ever have Funyuns? anyway, I guess let's move on to talking about Doom Eternal, which is that's out on Switch. We had a really cool interview that went up last week, shortly after it was announced. You know what? I feel slightly comfortable talking about this. So, like, we got it because how else did we have a video interview with Panic Button, like, an hour after the Doom Eternal's release date was announced?
We're really good journalists, Neil.
Yeah, we're just super fast.
We were like, yo, Panic Button, let's do this. Hop on Discord right now. And they were like, okay, best friends at NWR. Yeah. And that's what happened. And then I mislabeled one of the nice gentlemen in the video. I'm sorry, Travis.
So slight peek behind the curtain. Like, we got contacted about that where they're like, hey, Doom's Eternal's coming out on December 8th. Do you want to do this interview? And we were like, of course, yes. Like, Panic Button's really cool. But we knew about it when everybody was like, the retail versions are all getting canceled. And we're there like, oh, no.
The interview was like happening while everyone was panicking.
Yeah,
and it was so hard not to be like, I don't think you guys need to worry.
Yeah, it was at the point where, like, we couldn't even have asked. Like, the interview already happened when all of that went down. So it's not like we could be like, hey, people are freaking out about this. What's the story? And we probably could have gotten concretely that, like, oh, there's just a digital release right now. And I don't think they've committed to ever putting out a physical version. That I feel like there will be, but I don't know for sure.
They did. Nintendo did officially cancel the SKU that they had for it.
Okay.
So it might be more dead than we think.
Yeah, that is unfortunate for the physical people out there.
Yes, of which I am one.
But you were playing Doom Eternal. How does it run on Switch?
You know, Panic Button or a bunch of sell their souls to the devil kind of guys. And this game runs great. Comparing it to the first, Doom 2016 on Switch and then like the two Wolfenstein games on Switch. I was a little worried because Wolfenstein 2, especially handheld mode, could get down to a resolution where it became kind of difficult to play. This hasn't so far, which is impressive because it's a different version of the engine. Like both Doom 2016 and Wolfenstein 2 ran in id Tech 6. And this is id Tech 7. Right. So it's an entirely new engine. It's built like it scales to, you know, the Xbox One and PS4. But really, this is an engine built for like PS5 and Series X. So the fact that this is running this well on Switch is remarkable. I have noticed it's a much bigger in scale game and just a faster game. There's a lot more of like being in one environment, walking through a portal, and then just immediately being in another environment without really any loading. And so I've noticed a lot more like little bits of pop in and some low poly stuff hanging out for a bit longer, which can be fun if you run into a group of bad guys while the environment's still loading and you can glory kill them while they're at like N64 resolution. And that's exciting. I have a screenshot of, I think it's the Revenant. I don't know all my Doom bad guy names, but the jetpack skeletons. I have a screenshot of glory killing him and he's at like, he has like 10 faces, 10, like he's like, really low poly. His mouth is just a triangle. It's great.
So when it does get to those moments, it's at least play smooth.
Oh yeah, that's the thing, is it runs, the frame rate doesn't seem to really drop from what I can spot, and the resolution stays significantly higher than what it would drop down to on Wolfenstein 2. So it feels like a better optimized game, and I think where it runs into problems are just when this game tries to do things that are honestly impressive that it's getting this close, where you just go from one environment straight into another and you can see the game just like, ah, crap, I got to load all this stuff, and having stuff appearing right before you, which can be a little distracting, but it, you know, it resolves. Just some aggressive pop in. I have no idea what's going on in the plot. This game has way more plot than the first Doom, or than Doom 2016 did, which I don't think I like. One of my favorite things about Doom 2016 was that it felt very much like a comment on how games had become all about cutscenes and you should just be able to play them. And I really jived with that and enjoyed it. And now this one sure has a lot of cutscenes, and none of them make any sense unless you take the time to like read all the codex entries. And so it seems like kind of a half baked attempt to get into story, but I'm not super far into it. So
there was part of me that like the simplicity of the Doom 2016 story and how it was told. So it's a little disappointing that they're like, we're going deep into lore. And I'm like, no, I kind of liked it when they were just like, oh, he's back in the suit and he's just killing everything.
I've heard some fairly insane things about how the story goes in that game. Like
it feels like there's a lot
of retcons is what I've heard.
Yeah.
It
feels like there's a lot going on. It's just that I don't like, I paused the game today while I was playing and just went into the codex entries and started reading. Cause I was like, I have no idea. Like I'm talking to a character as if I know who he is and I have no idea who he is. And he's telling me things that I feel like I should care about, but I don't even know where we are. Like, I think we might have been in hell, but it was red. I don't know. So it feels like it doesn't commit to the story enough to actually tell you what the story is. It just commits to it enough that there are several cutscenes and characters talk a lot.
I hope that at the end of the game, the Rock busts through a wall. It says, Semper Fi, mother effer.
I mean, that would make about as much sense as the stuff I've seen so far.
That's all I remember from the Doom movie.
Have you found Isabel yet?
I did see a green dog, but I think it was a ghost. I got to a level and I was following a green dog ghost through a castle, and I don't know why. And like that level's over now, and I still don't know what that dog ghost was, or if it mattered.
It was probably just like a glitch on the Switch version.
Yeah, it's exclusive. I'm having fun. I just have no idea what's happening. And it's a far cry from 2016, which very famously, when the narrator tried to explain the plot at the beginning of the game, the Doom guy just punches the intercom to stop him from talking.
Yep. it's a really good moment.
Yeah, it's great.
Just replay the first game.
Yeah.
So with Doom Eternal, what do we think the future of like these kind of impossible ports on Switch are? Like what games do we think will be, you know, The Witcher 3 or The Doom Eternal of 2021 or 2022?
I don't think it's going to be Cyberpunk.
No.
I'm a little worried that with these like these streaming versions that are coming in now, that we might not see these impossible ports anymore. We might just see them relegated to the streaming versions.
Mess because, like, granted, I buy digital games, and I think we talked about this last week, actually. I think John was the person being like, you know, like, digital games have their own problems, but you know what's a bigger problem? Paying $60 for Control when, if the server's down, you can't play it. It's the Stadia issue.
Yeah, you will eventually, if you buy in large quotation marks, if you buy Control on Switch, there will come a day where you can just no longer play that. At least with the digital ones, you could in theory disconnect your system from the internet and always have them, but that's not the case with streaming games. And I will say that in that interview we did with Panic Button, we actually asked him about that, and they seem to also recognize that problem as that going against the entire purpose of the Switch.
Yeah, my service provider is Comcast. I can't really, really do all that.
I'm going to need a native port.
Yeah.
Yeah. And maybe there's some middle ground where, you know, I buy the native port, and then when I'm playing with a great internet connection, I can stream in extra horsepower to soup up my game or something. But I think there has to be a native option for it to make sense on Switch.
I would agree with that, yeah.
So I think my pick for it's not even an impossible port. It's just I feel like we saw Nintendo and Rockstar have LA Noire back at, you know, what was that? Was that 2017?
Maybe 17 or 18. It was pretty early.
It was pretty early on in the Switch's life, but we haven't really seen anything else with that. I don't think it would be, quote unquote, an impossible port. It would just be like a port. But bring Red Dead Redemption. The first one.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Grand Theft Auto. Yeah, I mean,
I would rather have Red Dead. I would rather have Red Dead. Like, that's definitely like a little bit of like a personally for me, because even if like some of the heaping praise of the like the dude with the quote that was like, it's the rootinest, tootinest video game ever, and if you don't play it, you're not a gamer. Like, that stuff all annoyed me. But like, I enjoyed the first Red Dead. It was a fun game.
The second Red Dead is a heaping pile of trash, but the first one was fun.
just put the first Red Dead on Switch. You could sell that crap for like $50-$60. I'm sure people would buy it.
Yeah. Every 360 and PS3 game should be on Switch at this point.
Yeah. I mean, where's Oblivion? Where's Oblivion?
It's super weird that we're not getting that Mass Effect trilogy on Switch, but also I mean, you've said this before, Neil. It's just, you can't really blame EA. They sure gave Nintendo a try in the past.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It still is.
The Mass Effect thing will always be mind-boggling. I mean, and I guess, you know, I'm usually like EA corporate defender over here. It is still patently ridiculous that they're like, Mass Effect 3 coming out to Wii U on launch. People coming from the Nintendo systems being like, what the hell's Mass Effect? Also the same day, like, the trilogy just came out on every other platform.
Yeah, but they put that comic book in, so it's fine.
That's totally understandable. I knew what happened.
It's so funny that comic book exists, because they did the same thing for Mass Effect 2 on PS3.
Yep.
That's just how they do. Also, that version of Mass Effect on Wii U is real good, and I don't feel like it gets enough praise.
Shame Mass Effect 3 in general ain't real good.
It's fine.
I do. I mean, like, I never played the final version, but I played it at a demo event, and I remember being like, this seems good.
Yeah, no, the gamepad integration is good. It runs well. It looks good.
You know, it was really cool in
BioWare
theory.
Just
the
forgot
gamepad.
They were making an RPG somewhere along the line.
That's true, but that was a problem in 2.
It was, but it was more of a problem in 3.
Actually, no, here's my impossible port for Switch. Where's KOTOR?
Right, it's on phones.
Well, that would require them to, like, make a functioning port of KOTOR.
And it those phone ports are done by the same group that did the same company that did the episode one Racer.
Aspyr Media or whatever. Yeah, Aspyr. But just put KOTOR on Switch. I don't care if it's janky. I don't care if there's a mouse pointer or whatever. Like, I play that stuff on my laptop just because I think I tried playing it on, like, my netbook years ago. Like, those games just rule. Like,
I mean, they're no Republic Commando, but they're fine.
I've never been able to, like, actually play KOTOR because the UI doesn't scale on PC. So it's like you've got this UI that's optimized for 480p.
Oh, yeah.
And I've got a 1440p monitor, and it's just like, oh my god, I cannot read.
And
what,
like,
this
knowing
text says.
what the port quality of Aspyr has been for some of those Switch ports, which, like, they're passable. Maybe KOTOR wouldn't be fixed, but, like,
Racer was fine. They fixed all the issues Racer had.
Yeah.
Like, within a week of it coming out, which was mostly just that there were no lens flares, which was egregious, but you know,
it's really funny. I still think that Racer port was great because I just think it's cool that, like, there's a game in a license that came out 20 years ago that I can now, like, throwback play on current consoles.
And it's amazing to me how well that game held up.
Yeah, I know a lot of people kind of dunk on it, but I remember even when I got the footage for our, like, ridiculous comparison where I have the Dreamcast version of that game. So guess what? If you want to see what that Dreamcast version looks like in comparison to the Switch version, we got you back.
Spoilers, but they all kind of look the same.
Yeah, there's not a lot of very minute differences. But the Dreamcast version, I wound up just, like, playing an hour and a half of that. It was like, this is just fantastic. It's really fun.
Yeah.
I'm trying to, like, look at my Steam library, be like, what should come to Switch? And it's like, when I see, like, the cross section of, like, games that actually did come to Switch, it's like, I do not see the connecting thread here. So it's, I truly cannot try to make any predictions as to what's actually going to come to Switch.
Hellblade 2.
I know it's, please. I know it's, like, my stereotypical brand to just say Yakuza, but it's like, at this point, it's like what else could I say? It's like
there's a precedent. They're on Wii U,
but they did really poorly.
The
on Wii
U has
being
the definitive version of the PS2 versions of Yakuza 1 and 2.
But aren't those, like, bad?
Yeah,
sure, but it's still the definitive version.
I know. Isn't there that stuff that, like, the producer for all the Yakuza games is like, the Switch is for teens?
No, I think he just, like, I think he cites that Wii U version when it comes up. And I mean, obviously this doesn't really matter now that it's on Xbox, but he's also said, like, back when we were starting this franchise, like, Nintendo and Microsoft both turned us down. Sony was the only one that was really willing to give us a chance. And, like, well, nowadays that's not as much of an issue, but
yeah,
I mean, it does seem like Yakuza makes more sense on Switch than it does on Xbox One.
I think Microsoft has bigger pocketbooks.
Yeah, I was about to say that what makes more sense is money.
Yeah. Which, I mean, good on Microsoft. I mean, this as a Microsoft-sponsored show, I do fully support that. But
yes. Now that it's on Xbox, I'm playing Yakuza slowly.
Put Among Us on Switch. I don't know.
Why not?
So speaking of Among Us and other beloved indie online games, Matt, you put down that you've been playing Fall Guys. I played Fall Guys at events. I have not played the final Fall Guys, the actual Fall Guys. It seems ridiculous and really fun.
It super is. Overall, like, I really should have been playing, like, Banjo-Tooie, for example, lately. Sorry, Joe. But, like, I'm in that point of the year where it's like, my job gets really difficult around the holidays. So it's like, you know, let's just fall back into some comfort games. And Fall Guys is a really good comfort game for me because it's the kind of game that, like, by definition, you can't take seriously, even though I do, because it is designed to, like, even though a lot of it, like, your skill does matter, a lot of it's just kind of bullshit. It's very Mario Party in that way. But where Mario Party is this, it's a board game. Fall Guys is a 3D platformer, which is kind of a genre that some of us here have a lot of experience with. Three of us may know our way around 3D platformers, I'd say.
Yeah, it might.
And it's very evident when, like, I talk to my friends and play Fall Guys with them, how much more I've played 3D platformers than they have, because, like, the levels that they hate in Fall Guys, which I love, are the ones that are, like, based on 3D platforming skill. Like,
yeah,
like, there's this one level, Slime Climb, where it's literally just a 3D platforming challenge that's timed as, like, this sea of slime is rising and you'll just die if you touch the slime. And that's my favorite level because I never die on Slime Climb. and all my friends hate it because they always die on Slime Climb. And Fall Guys just has this chaotic energy that's just so much fun. Even like when I'm playing the levels that I really hate, which would be anything where you have to literally jump through a hoop, it still manages to, like, be a lot of fun, because those bad levels don't last very long, and you just kind of accept it as, like, part of the game, because it that's the beauty of it, where it still manages to make sure that even if you're not as good at the skill based platforming, you still have a chance to get pretty far. And
yeah,
it's a game that, like, really balances the playing field that way, with its completely wild elements and physics that are kind of bad on purpose. Like, you're, like, the character that you're playing as, the beans as they're called, like, if you bump into each other at, like, the wrong speed at the wrong angle, you will just fall over into a ragdoll state that's just hilarious to see. And it's that happens even more when you're, like, actively sabotaging other players, which you should, because they will actively sabotage you. One time I won an entire game of Fall Guys because the final stage was this one where it's, like, there's this, like, rotating horizontal beam, and there's, like, two of them that are stacked on top of each other going at different speeds, and they're, like you have to jump over one and go under another. And it was down to me and this one other guy. So it's, like, all I did, like, I just grabbed onto him so neither of us can move. We both got knocked off the platform of together, and it's just God decided, and I won. And that's the kind of stuff I live for.
I just love seeing the experimentation with online play. I mean, it's something that, like, it's why I got really deep into Splatoon back in the days, because it was just something that I hadn't really seen before. And I mean, it kind of sucks because I feel like Fall Guys is a game that, like you, I would get really into. I mean, I guess it's on PC. I guess I can get it there, but I don't really play games on PC that much. And right now I just don't have a console that plays it. I mean, maybe it's the kind of thing that, like, is just a year exclusive on Sony platforms or something, or maybe before it ever comes to another platform, maybe I'll have broken down and gotten a PS5.
I want to say the game feels perfect for Switch, but also I think back to, like, every time this game that graphically is extremely simple has just dropped frames on PS4.
Yeah.
It's simple, but it's pretty.
Yeah.
There's probably more technically going on than.
Yeah. And it's how many players do you have at a time?
Yeah. 60.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that's Switch can barely do Mario 35. By
one. They had to, like, write their own netcode for it, right? Because it's the, I remember them talking about the engine not natively supporting what they needed to do.
Yeah, I don't know what the engine is, like, what past games they would have used it on. But, like, this is from Mediatonic. Like,
yeah.
Hey, they did Murder by Numbers.
Yeah, I look at their point A to point B, and it doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah,
but I think
just people had the idea. Like, I've heard some things about Mediatonic where there's a little bit of, like, incubation there, where there's people that all work there, and it's kind of like, all right, like, this dude's got an idea. Yeah, let's see if there's a market for it. Let's pursue it. Like, mm-hmm. And there's some, like, indie publishers that seem to be doing more of that, whether it's, you know, doing stuff internally or working with other partners. I mean, even look at Devolver Digital, like, from game to game, like, a lot of the gameplay is super different, but it all has this, like, kind of similar brand. that's, I guess, my brief aside with that is Disc Room is very good. I started playing that. I probably actually almost beat it in one sitting because it's not that long of a game. But like that just feels like a Devolver game. I don't know how many other Devolver games play exactly like that. Probably not many. And that's what I feel like companies like Mediatonic are also doing, where it's like, we're going to look for, like, what's our style? What kind of games do we want to have? And Fall Guys happen to come out of that.
Yeah, although, like, it is kind of, like, it's interesting to see, like, how they just suddenly had this killer year. Because they've been around for, like, 15 years developing, like, browser games. And then...
I will say, I don't know if, like, I think it's just Fall Guys. Like, I love Murder by Numbers. I don't know if Murder by Numbers really sold that well in comparison. I don't think it sold poorly, but, like, Fall Guys is just on a different stratosphere for that company.
Yeah, and even they didn't expect Fall Guys to do as well as
Yeah. It's, if anybody wants to geek out about, like, good marketing strategies in video games, like, go do some case study research into Fall Guys, because it really was just such a perfect execution of, like, this is the idea, this is how we're going to communicate it. Like, seeing their setups at events, like, the people marketing this game knew what they had.
They have also they specifically have given a lot of credit to PS Plus as causing word of mouth to really spread for the game, which I mean that's how I played it. I had heard of it. I had no expectations, and then like, oh, wow, this is fantastic.
It happened to Rocket League a couple years ago. Rocket League was on PS Plus, and I mean both of these games probably would have found their audiences regardless. But like, look at Rocket League now. Like, it's ginormous. And it came out, and I remember it was the same thing. It wasn't on my radar. I was like, oh, okay, like, car soccer is free on PS Plus, sure. And then I just wound up playing it, like, nonstop for, like, 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's, I never got as into Rocket League, but, like, that is kind of just the story of Fall Guys for me. And especially now, it's like, we're about to get Season 3. By the time this episode comes out, we will know what Season 3 is, because they're revealing it at the Game Awards. And, like, you know, twice a season they add new maps and it just mix up the gameplay even more. So it's really exciting that this game just works. And I'm like, I get to keep playing it more because they're gonna keep making stuff for it, and it's really fun.
That is fantastic. So I guess this has gone on for a while. Maybe in the future we should limit how many games we talk about. Anyway, here's another game that I'm gonna talk about.
That's why I've been playing like Yakuza and Hyrule Warriors, but it's like you guys talked about both of those last week. I don't need to bring that back.
I just want to mention that I'm still very early on in Dragon Quest XI S, playing that game for the third time, and hopefully I will get past the 10-hour mark this time on Xbox. But I just want to bring it up because I'm 2 hours into it, but I've been playing it with my 2-year-old son. Watching it with me, and when I get into battles, he just like shouts out the numbers of the damage because he's learning to count. So like I'll hit a slime for like 8 damage and he'll just be like 8, and then I'll get hit for damage 3, and then like now I've gotten a little farther in the game, like, you know, someone will crit and it'll be like 27, and then he'll just look at me and being like, I don't know, man, I can only count to 10. What the hell are you talking about? But it's just adorable. And I look forward to, you know, working my way through that game. I don't know. There's a good chance I just, you know, binge through it while he's sleeping and then be like, oh, this is exactly where we left off, son. I don't know what you're talking about. But
JRPGs are confusing.
Yeah, it looks really good. And the fact that there's no load times is why I think I did think when this came out on Game Pass, I'm like, maybe I should just play this on Switch, considering that I do own it there and also on PlayStation 4. But the load times on Xbox Series X for Dragon Quest XI are like non-existent, and it's really, really nice. So it does get me to thinking that as I'm in, you know, COVID times and not really leaving the house as often, I might wind up going multi-platform on Xbox more than I expected, because the visual fidelity mixed with how quick the load times are for stuff compared to Switch. Like I was playing Series X for the first time with all the wonderfully short load times while I was playing Hyrule Warriors Age of Calamity, which those load times aren't short. They take quite a long time. I would like go like, all right, I'm going to start this level and like go up and like go to the bathroom, get a drink and come back and be like, all right, perfect. Just in time.
On the bright side, the levels are like 2 hours long. So
yeah,
those load times are an investment in
the
future.
And like, And, like, I also, like, I'm not dumb. Like, I understand the limitations of the Switch and that it's not, it doesn't have an SSD. Like,
yeah,
there's, it makes sense why there are load times on the Switch. But if I have the choice between
life changing for games.
Yeah. Like, I didn't think I would like the short loads as much as I do. But if it's like coming down to, like, you know, a game like, I don't know, Monster Sanctuary or Unto the End, which are both coming out on Switch or out on Switch. I think both of those games are out now. They're also on Game Pass. So, like, one, I don't have to pay any more money. And guess what? The game's going to run better on Xbox. So that's where I'm at there. Matt, do you want to say anything about Heroes of the Storm? Is that another comfort game in the holiday? Yeah,
pretty much. I don't need to say too much about it. It's, you know, I got a brand new graphics card. What's the first thing we play on it? It's how about a five-year-old MOBA? Heroes of the Storm is a game that I played nonstop for like a year and a half with me and my buddies in college. Like, we would get home from class and we would just play that game until like midnight. We averaged like 7 or 8 games a night, and each game's like 20, 30 minutes long. And like I looked at my stats and I have like multiple thousands of games put into this. And it's just, you know, I fell off it for a little bit because, you know, just like, you know, one of my buddies moved out. We finished college. We just had less time together, and they ruined the monetization system by putting in loot boxes. Like, all that happened at once, and I just fell out of it for a good while. And it's like, now it's got me again. It's like Heroes of the Storm is like literally Smash Brothers for Blizzard characters. But in this case, Smash Brothers is League of Legends, and I've never played a Blizzard game. I've played Overwatch, but that wasn't until after I was already into Heroes of the Storm, which was really fun when they made a cosmetic for Overwatch that was only available by playing 25 rounds in Heroes of the Storm. And Heroes of the Storm was just ruined for like a month because Overwatch players would like just hated it. But I've been getting back into that. It's like, you know, just me and those buddies, same buddies that I played it with in college. We, you know, nowadays we can't hang out in person and watch movies. So instead we just got online, played video games. We played Heroes the other night and we played like 5 games together. They went to bed and I stayed up till 3 a.m. playing on my own. And like Heroes of the Storm is like the low tier MOBA for most people. Like you got the big two of Dota and League. And then Heroes is over there in the corner that everyone else kind of turns their nose up on it. It's like,
it seems like it's the one that you're like, I'm just going to like sit back and drink a beer and like mess around with this game. Whereas like League and Dota seem like it's serious business.
It is definitely more casual, especially because rounds average around 25 minutes, whereas rounds in League are 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And
that was the brief time that I played League. I was just like, I don't like the commitment of this long of a game.
Yeah. And I also like the way that it does character builds better, because in League, your character is your character. And then you there's an in-game item shop that you buy items from every game. And that's the build that you're going with. Whereas Heroes has each character has different skill buffs that you could choose from every couple of levels. And that's your build. So instead of like one item set that affects everyone at once that you choose from for your build, everyone has their own unique sets that they can go into. And I just like that more.
So did you guys ever hear or play a game called Awesome Knots?
I've heard of it.
I know that name.
I don't even know if it's still active. It's by Ronimo Games. They did the Swords and Soldiers games. I think they also have a new one with like Devolver or someone called like Blightfall, maybe. But Awesome Knots is basically a 2D side-scrolling MOBA that I got super, super into. I don't know. It's just very good. I don't even know if it's still active, but like I put in, it was the same kind of thing where I had tried League and I didn't really get into it. And then I saw this game and like the games are a lot shorter. And it is that like way more casual, and you could do it where I would play a lot with like a friend on split screen and we would go online together. And it was a ton of fun. It was a really good game. But anyway, let's talk about...
We just need a Nintendo MOBA.
They really... Why haven't they done that?
I actually might play that Pokemon MOBA.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if the Pokemon MOBA is going to be any good, but I will try it because I'm curious.
I just want to relive my Heroes of the Storm days, which is exactly what I'm doing now anyway.
So you mentioned that you got a graphics card. And that's going to go to one of our feature stories an hour into the pod. So you and I both had like retail pre-order debacles, or I guess even just ordering debacles. I'll go through mine pretty quickly. So I pre-ordered the Fire Emblem, whatever the subtitle is, the Fire Emblem Famicom game, that collector's edition.
Shadow Dragon and the Blade of Light.
Yes.
Too long. Did not listen.
Me and my friends call it Dark Dragon to differentiate from Shadow Dragon.
That works. That's a good idea. So Dark Dragon, it is, I got the collector's edition on GameStop, and it was that kind of frantic thing where, you know, we had in our internal Slack chat where it would just be like, oh, it's up on Amazon, someone go get it. And I wound up, I missed out a wave or two, got on GameStop. I was like, okay, that's done. Like, that'll show up at launch. It's all settled. Like, 2 days before that came out last week, I got an email from GameStop that was like, oh, your payment was declined. So I looked into it and, like, re-entered my, like, I was paying with it through PayPal, and then I just, like, fixed it because I was like, I've had issues with paying for things through PayPal in the past. Like, I'll throw in, you know, my card that I was going to pay for it. And it was like, all right, everything's good, but it didn't really give it. It saved my card information and didn't say like things were fixed. And then I just kept on getting that email like every 24 hours at about 2 a.m. saying that your payment was not working. I called GameStop customer service. They said it was fine. And that was like Friday. Also on Friday, Amazon had it up for pre-order or no, Amazon just had it up for order because it was already out. So I ordered it off of Amazon. And then on Monday, I was like, well, maybe I guess two of these are going to show up. Like, I'll see if like a friend wants it or something. Then Monday night, I got the same thing from GameStop where it was like, your payment's declined. And it's like, okay, I have my PayPal and my credit card here. What the hell? Also, my Amazon shipment shipped on like Sunday after I bought it on Friday. So I just canceled my GameStop pre-order. And I mentioned this on Twitter, and then no less than like 5 hours after I did this, GameStop had more copies of it available. So I joke that GameStop had my copy and then put it up for order again. But it was a really frustrating experience. And like, man, I have a lot of questions about what GameStop is, and I think I'm done buying things from them and supporting them. And
I just saw a headline today that they closed 400 stores this year.
That's a lot of stores.
They overexpanded, and this year might be the end for them.
Yeah.
Which would be great. Open up room for more small game retailers for at least a little bit till one of them becomes huge.
Yep. And then like, it's Babbage's 2.0.
my experience was with the new NVIDIA graphics card, the RTX 3000 series. And this was kind of a canary in the coal mine for how the PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X have gone. Because I'm sure I don't need to explain to anyone now how difficult it is to get a hold of one of those consoles. Unless you like happen to be listening to this episode in 2 years and don't remember what it was like. In which case, let me tell you, it's not very fun. Because this started in September for me, I had been thinking about like getting a new graphics card for a little while, and I had heard that the new NVIDIA and AMD generations of cards were coming out later this year. So I decided, I'll wait for that because I don't really think I want like the top of the line thing. That'll be too expensive, but it's going to be like the price will go down on the current stuff. So that'll be a good time to buy. And then I just idly saw, NVIDIA's revealing the cards now. I guess I'll watch that. And the cards that they showed off are the 3000 line. It was like these ridiculously high tech, top of the line stuff. We've got ray tracing in it. It's got DLSS, which is an AI driven process that raises your increases your frame rate inherently, like just with magic, basically. It was like this whole thing. It was like the whole time I was like, these cards are gonna be so expensive. And then they were like, and our flagship card is going to be only $700, half the price of the last generation. And I was like, what the fuck? So from that moment I was like, oh, I guess I'm getting a 3000 series card. And so the morning that the pre-orders were supposed to start, I don't remember what day it was exactly. And it was a Wednesday. They're supposed to go live at 9 a.m. I get up at 8:30. You know, I get online, I get all ready, and I'm on NVIDIA's website. And I see where it says coming soon. So 8:59 and 30 seconds comes around. And I hit refresh, and coming soon changes to sold out. And I'm like, what the fuck just happened? So I go to look at Best Buy. Best Buy says sold out. I look at all these other websites, sold out, every single one of them. And like I got, you know, one of my friends was doing the same thing. He was like, I never saw an add to cart button. It's just gone. So I went on Reddit. I went on like all the websites. Like everyone was saying, like, no one got this card. Not a single person got this card. But it's on eBay right now for $2,000. And so began almost 3 months. No, I guess it would be closer to two, since it came out later in September. So just over 2 months of desperately trying to get one of these cards. And like, if you were just like trying to go to any old Best Buy website or any old store, it wasn't happening. Like you'd go to Micro Center and you'd get there at Micro Center. For those who don't know, it's a specialty electronics store. They're national, but there's not that many of them. If you have one near you, they're like the place to go for computer parts. And you go to Micro Center, they open at 9, you get there at 5 a.m. and there's already a line. Eventually, Micro Center stops saying when they're going to have cards in stock. They stop even, if you call them, they won't tell you if you have cards in. They say to come check in person. And so, it's just becomes this desperate attempt now. EVGA is the first one to, like, actually open up a page that says, hey, if you sign up for notifications here, then on a first come first serve basis, we're going to just keep a list and we're going to go in order. When we get a new card in, next person in line, you have 8 hours to check out. And someone got like as many people as they could to like put in their information when they signed up, when they actually got their card. This list turned out to be 1500 people long. And that is just the people that filled out the spreadsheet. If you signed up literally as they got it, that was as they opened this thing, that was on September 17th, I think. Right now, right this very minute, people that are getting their cards from this system signed up on September 17th, like literally the day later. I don't know if I said 17th both times. If I did, I misspoke. Like literally people that signed up the next day, and I signed up like a week later. So I look at this list, I'm not getting that card till March. So eventually I moved on to a browser extension called Distill. And what Distill does is at an interval that you set, I set it to every 30 seconds, it'll check a web page to see if there's been any change. It doesn't even check if it says in stock, because that would take too long. By then it's sold out. It'll just tell you if there has been a change. And then it'll make a loud sound and immediately switch your browser over to that page. And if you're lucky, maybe it'll say in stock. Normally, it was just some back-end change that happens like six times a day. But every now and then it says in stock, and you get to click on that and say, this item is now out of stock. And eventually, I got banned by Newegg for botting. And I got to the point where I was so ready to give up. I was ready to just give up and say, you know what? I'll do this when I could just walk into a store and buy one. And then my buddy sends me a link to a Discord server where people are monitoring their local Micro Centers and letting everyone know when there's cards in stock. And I said to him, don't do this to me, man. So I clicked on the link, I joined the Discord server, and I looked over at the page for my nearest Micro Center. And it says, and I see people saying, there was a big stock drop today. They have like five of them left. And I sit there for like 10 minutes. Like, am I really doing this? And I got up, I walked out the door, drove 50 minutes to Micro Center, and I got the very last one.
Yay.
Was it worth it?
I got home, I plugged it in, and I learned that my CPU is not good enough to keep up with this card, so now I need to get a new CPU. And once again, Sisyphus makes a trip up the hill.
Well, I'm glad that story has like a semi-happy ending.
It does.
Like, I guess it's like a happy ending, but like definitely there's another season.
My monitor is 144 hertz refresh rate and 1440p. I can now play games at 1440p with 60 frames per second.
Sweet.
Which, that's an improvement. I'll take it. And I'll get this CPU in like a month or something.
Yeah.
But that is the story of the closest I've had to success of getting hardware in. Well, the closest, like, it actually worked. But it's like you couldn't do that for the PlayStation 5. PlayStation 5's not in stores. It's online only.
Yeah.
So like,
I have seen one shipment of PS5s.
My best bet so far, because like I'm thinking of getting a PS5, and I know someone that definitely wants a PS5. So it's like every time I see one up, I try to get it for him. PlayStation is doing this like direct queue thing.
Yeah. Like,
that I feel like that's probably the best way to do it. Where it's like they say, hey, we're going live in 30 minutes. Sign up here. We'll put you in a line. And then once those 30 minutes hit, they randomize the line. So it doesn't matter when you got there.
Yeah.
They randomize it. And I think that's probably the best way to like actually make this work, because I don't know if you guys took the hint from this story, but humans are not buying those graphics cards.
Yes.
No.
So I think this is probably the best way to do it. But I've had zero luck.
Yeah, I've resigned myself with the I don't know if I'll do the PS5, but with the Series X, I've resigned myself to I'll aim for it like around like my birthday in April of next year and see how things are going.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
but I guess I'm not even going to try
PlayStation 5
for several months.
I didn't have an interest in getting. I mean, I still don't have an interest in getting one for the foreseeable future. I did have one pre-ordered on Amazon in like September for 15 minutes. That I kind of regret not having, like, not keeping that pre-order, just because I know a few people that want PS5s. Because it was just like, I happened to be on my computer.
Or you could have thrown
like,
your morals out the window and made bank.
Yeah, I could have done that too. But like, yeah, it was just I happened to be on my computer, and I just saw on Twitter where it was like, oh, they're up for pre-order on Amazon. It was the first wave, and I was like, oh, I should just do this. And I had it there, and I was like, I'll just like leave it there. I'm like, now, like, I don't really have anything I want to play on it specifically. Like, I don't like the look of the system. I just kind of want the Xbox, and, you know, all's well that ends well. Very content with my Series X.
Yeah. I have a PlayStation 5 controller. Because
I've heard that's a great Switch controller.
Well, it is a very good controller. It's very good build quality. The it has, like, double HD rumble, which is cool. Unfortunately, nothing on PC supports the adaptive triggers, so I don't know how those are, but I've heard they're fantastic.
Those seem like they're gonna break. A trigger that fights the player, I feel like is going to break.
I don't know. People say they're real good. Like I said, I haven't got to test it because nothing on PC actually uses it. But
it's early.
I mean, give it some time.
We'll see.
But yeah, retail right now is not the best.
Yeah. You know, it also isn't the best. According to most people, Nintendo.
So after this episode, I need everybody to rate Neil's segues in this episode versus my segues in the last episode, because Neil's are awful.
That's the point, John.
Yeah, mine were like awful in a way that like the two things still kind of related.
Speaking of throwing your morals out the window to make a profit.
Nintendo.
Oh, I wasn't sure if we were talking about Nintendo or the Etika cons.
I mean, aren't they the same? Isn't this the same debacle?
Wait, are we saying that those Etika Joy-Cons were not officially licensed by Nintendo?
I mean, I just feel like this all kind of spun out of the free Melee stuff, which, I mean, John, you were chomping at the bit to just rag on the world.
To talk about this?
Yeah. You're why it's here.
Do you want me to talk about free melee or free or the
you
Nintendo
can talk
shutting
about
down the Joy-Con
you want.
Thing?
Don't worry, I've got a couple tabs open with like case law examples.
Well, very quickly, free melee is dumb. Move on to the current game. If Nintendo is at all involved in your tournament and they don't want you to use an emulated version, that's fine. They're fully within their right to say that. They're not stopping you from playing Melee. They're not getting rid of all the copies in existence. They're just saying, hey, maybe don't do this at this tournament that we're involved in. And that's fine. As for the what's that guy's name? Captain Alex? Is that his name?
Yes.
The Etika Joy-Cons thing. Nintendo, as a company that owns things and would like them to be represented well, even as, like, pathetically well as the Joy-Con is represented.
I feel like Nintendo has done more damage to the Joy-Cons right. than anybody else. Yeah, it's not like
it has
could.
An outstanding reputation, but what reputation is left, if they want to preserve that by not having unlicensed companies making accessories for their systems, they are fully within their right to do that, and there's no story here.
I want to point out, as far as Nintendo doing their own brand damage, I typed in Joy-Con into Google, and the autocomplete are, in order, Drift, Controller, Repair. Drift Repair.
Yep. The Joy-Con is the worst controller Nintendo's ever made. Change my mind.
No. I agree. And
we're on the same page.
In all fairness, all controllers will eventually develop drift. It is a limitation of how analog sticks work. The Joy-Cons with their tiny microscopic analog sticks and the fact that people are actually playing it, unlike the Vita, are just more likely to have that happen sooner.
Oh, I think I heard what's like, aren't the Joy-Con like connectors for the joysticks like made of graphite? Like that stuff that wears down as part of pencils?
There's something, yeah, they wear down faster.
I'm not an engineer, but I feel like there's a smarter choice than that.
But you want to share the joy.
My understanding is that it's something where, because of the size of them, that wear is an order of magnitude more, has a greater effect because of how small it is. So if you're wearing through the same amount that you are on like an Xbox One controller, just for example, sponsored by Xbox One here at Connectivity, then wearing through the same amount on a Switch is a greater percentage of the total amount of the stick that you're wearing through, is my understanding. But that could be 100% wrong. But regardless, if they don't want people to use their intellectual property without permission, that's fine. The end.
I don't really have a take on Captain Alex and that whole Etikons thing. Because
he seems really mentally stable and like a lovely guy.
The entire saga of like everything that's happened with Etika is just like stuff that I kind of don't want to have a take on, because it's just such a complicated thing of like
it,
this guy. Like
it
this
comes off as gross.
That, I mean, yeah. It's the kind of thing where it's that weird balancing act of. I mean, I'm trying to think of like a broader Robin Williams when he died.
Yeah.
Like it's that kind of thing where like, okay, there is that little bit of like people are going to grieve or Kobe Bryant mm-hmm. dying, where it was a public figure. People are going to grieve about it. But you also like there's that line of I got really sad when Robin Williams died and Kobe Bryant died. I don't really like basketball that much. It's just that like it's Kobe. Got sad about that more for the tragedy. And there will be celebrities that I'm more attached to that they die and I get really sad about it. But there's that balance between like, you know, making a spectacle of the person's death versus like letting the family grieve. And I think that's some mm-hmm. of the stuff that I've seen with Etika. Granted, from afar, like I'm not speaking as a total authority on the subject. It was just weird seeing all of the noise before he died. And I just want to make sure I'm correctly saying this. He did commit suicide, right? Just making sure that I'm not using the wrong phrasing for things.
I'm not certain if it's like confirmed, but I believe it's one of those things where it's
allegedly
like,
so all right, let's say allegedly. But like it was a tragedy, but like I look at that and like there were the weeks leading up to that when he was missing, when he was a public spectacle, where it was like it was this poor dude kind of losing his mind publicly. And a lot of the chatter that I saw online were people like egging him on and like celebrating how wild and wacky he was. And I'm sure it's not every single person out there was doing that. I'm sure that there were people who legitimately cared about him. But then when you see stuff like this kind of spawn out of it, it's just like, what's the dividing line between you're mourning the death, you're trying to turn a negative into a positive, and what's the dividing line of that and you just trying to enrich your own brand?
Yeah. And it's kind of why I've been uncomfortable with the idea of like having a take on the whole situation, like not just with the Etticons, but like with everything about Etticon himself. It's like, I feel like it just feels very, very off to me, like how that switch flipped. And it's obviously the internet is not a monolith. You have different people with different opinions and different morals, but it's just like, there was just not very much from people trying to like decry or like denounce, like the egging him on. So it just feels like people are just trying to capitalize on something, which just makes me very uncomfortable.
Feels like we're monetizing it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, even you look at, another like celebrity death, Chadwick Boseman, that, you know, him dying was after a couple years of people being like, why does he look so skinny? And it's like, cause he had cancer, dude.
Yeah.
Like granted, like we did not know that. Like you can't be like super mad at people for being like, oh, he looks really skinny. I wonder what's up with that, when we just didn't have the information. But I wasn't a lot of people being like, huh, I wonder if he's okay. It was a lot of people being like, look at Black Panther, blah, blah. Like, right. It's like the kind of like letting people exist and have their struggles, and allow them space to figure things out, as opposed to egging them on and pushing them over the edge. I mean, whatever happened with that. And I'll once again say, I guess kind of echoing Matt's like not wanting to have a take on it. Like, I will fully recognize myself as not the end all be all authority of everything with Etika. He was a dude that I knew existed, but did not really participate or watch any of his content. And then was sad to hear that he died, because it's sad when anybody dies.
Yes.
Yeah. That's just kind of all I see with like the recent stuff. Like it just feels like there is now a brand around mourning him, and it just makes me so uncomfortable. And it's not just Captain Alex. I think that a lot of people are making a brand out of mourning for this one person, and it just feels disrespectful and uncomfortable. And I just it's very strange.
Yeah.
And tying that into some of the wider Nintendo things that a lot of the internet is upset about, whether it's, you know, the Melee tournament or people protesting the Melee tournament and the Splatoon tournament that then got shut down, and like, you know, soundtracks being taken down from Guild of Sunner. With all those things, it's also like I keep on seeing this thread, and I think it was our good buddy Joe DeVader pointed this out on the Twitters. You see all these people being like, but we were doing this for charity. Like, it makes it fine for you to kind of like break the rules because it was for charity, which is like not really totally how it works.
Yeah, if you steal stuff and give it to charity, you still stole something.
Yeah, like maybe like you're less of a dick. But
right, like we can, like your motives might be good, but that doesn't make it not stealing.
Yeah, I can go like embezzle from a company and be like, but I gave it to poor people, and like now I still embezzled.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't know. I don't even know if like I can. Like, I feel like I've said everything that I could say about this. To be honest, I there's just the whole thing around this person's death, and like continually like making a big deal of it is just like very, very uncomfortable to me. If we want to like discuss more about like whether Nintendo is the devil, though.
We can go away from, I mean, the Etika stuff is one recent facet in a growing, I think that's what Neil is getting at, is there's a growing list of Nintendo defending their IP.
This always has happened. This isn't a new thing. Like,
no, and it's not just Nintendo either. I mean, it's everyone that owns IPs.
Yeah, I'm not going to pretend this is anything new, but my take on this, I kind of like made myself sort of infamous in the Nintendo World Report Discord that you can join now and like have good conversations with everyone there.
Go and yell at Matt
and yell at me. I've kind of like gotten myself infamous for like being the guy that is like kind of upset with Nintendo right now. And I don't like, I'm never going to pretend that Nintendo either, like, number one, Nintendo's not our friend. Number two, Nintendo's not evil. Nintendo is a business. Right. And me, as the person that I am, that you can probably tell by looking at my Twitter account sometimes, I don't really get along with businesses very well. Not these huge corporations. So I have my feelings on copyright law and IP law. Namely that I think that, like, I
it's all a capitalistic scam.
Yeah, but also, like, so my I want to, like, establish two facts first that I think are important. Fact number one, I have no disputing over whether or not Nintendo had the legal right to take down this tournament. There is no question there. They did. That's not even up for debate. And I don't think it is up for debate. But I also think that the mod in question for the Melee tournament, Slippy, I think that with my own research into emulation and case law, you've got Sony versus Kinectix, which established emulation as not only legal, but fair competition. You have the continued existence of a service called Console Connects, which is literally a ROM renting service, Blockbuster for ROMs and emulators, that 2 weeks into their life in 2001, they were sent a cease and desist from Nintendo, and they responded to Nintendo saying, well, actually, we've talked a lot with a lawyer, and we are confident that we are acting within the law. And then Nintendo never contacted them again. And it's been, and they are still going to this day. I downloaded their client and tried it tonight and played Metroid Zero Mission, a game that was released after Melee. So, like, I think that the idea that Slippy is illegal. Am I allowed to say its name? Will that get us in trouble?
Yeah.
You can say whatever you want. Nobody's listening.
So. Yeah, I mean, we're an hour and a half into a podcast that maybe no one's listening to.
Yeah.
If you're here from Nintendo.
The Nintendo reps have all nodded off at this point. Yeah.
I mean, so, like, shoot me a line if you want to talk about it. Like, I feel like a lot of other people are talking about this way more.
Yeah.
To them.
It is my opinion that Slippy and the use thereof is completely legal, meaning that, like,
sure.
Like, I can understand Nintendo's motives in this. We were sponsoring this tournament and then they went against our wishes. I understand those motives and I am not disputing them. I just, looking at it strictly from the perspective of what's legal and what's not, the decision to shut down this tournament, not pull their sponsorship, but, like, legally shut it down, was an arbitrary one, because there are other Slippy tournaments going on and they're not touching those. They never, the reason they shut down this tournament was just because they didn't like it. And my feelings as the political person that I am is that I don't think that should be how the law works. Like I said, I am not disputing whether or not that is how the law works, because it is. Nintendo can shut down any tournament they want for any reason. They can shut you down because they don't like the color of your shirt. That is completely within their rights. I just feel like the fact that they can do that for a game that they are not selling and not making any money off of is ridiculous. And I get that the lack of ability for this game is a marketing business strategy to, like, keep the modern Smash Brothers profitable, but that just makes it feel worse for me, because it's this existing piece of media that they're sitting on and refusing to let people, like, do what they want with, because they can and they profit off of it. And that's not how I personally feel like copyright law should work. I feel like copyright law should exist to protect creativity, not to protect profit. I think that you should make a fair profit off of the art that you create, but you should not be able to hold that art in, like, I don't know, a vault that a mouse might guard on the hopes that you'll make profit in the future. And like I just kind of said with, like, the Disney vault and this stuff that's going on with Taylor Swift having to re-record her entire discography because she got stabbed in the back by her record company. This is not a problem that I think is unique to video games. It is just very public in video games right now. And I will admit my bias is I like Melee. I am a fan of Melee, but
hey, the hell, I like Melee too.
But I feel like I feel like there's a line that is being crossed in capitalism that I feel it's my responsibility to speak out against. And people can say, well, do you really think Nintendo is going to change? And of course I don't. They don't care about me, and they shouldn't. I'm playing Heroes of the Storm. My opinion doesn't matter. But
you're going to play that Pokemon MOBA.
Yeah, but no one, like, you can't make positive change in the world by just sitting down and saying, well, that's the way it is. So I think from my perspective, it's important to speak out and say that I think this is wrong. And in fairness, a lot of people are not doing that. A lot of people are saying, oh, Nintendo's evil. They're trying to ruin our community, or oh, this, they don't have the right to do this. They're breaking the law by doing this. I don't believe in any of that. I believe that Nintendo is completely within their right to do this. What they are doing is completely legal, and I don't think that they should do it. And that is my stance, because I think that we should have a better system than this. And until such a system is made law, which is unlikely, unless there is a lot of public opinion change, then all we can do is try to say that this is what we want, in the hopes that it becomes the popular option. And that's why I feel the need to speak out in the way that I do and have the opinions that I do on this Melee tournament, because it's not just about this one tournament. It's about an entire system that I think is broken. And that is my radical anti-capitalist rant.
I don't even really think it's that radical. from one point it is. I mean, I think it's, what frustrates me with a lot of it is, I mean, I generally agree with you. It's just more that, like, people look at Nintendo as the enemy when the real enemy is capitalism. Like, that's what it is. To what you were saying, like, yeah, like, Nintendo's just doing what's in their right. And I think there's some confusion of, like, I see a lot of the Smash community commentary on this is like, we're doing so much free marketing for Nintendo. Are they? Like, I think
that's all for a game they're not selling anymore.
I think the deep, dark secret is that, unfortunately, for a lot of those, I mean, I guess specifically maybe focusing on fighting games, I don't know how much, like, people playing a lot of Street Fighter 2 at tournaments is really selling copies of Street Fighter 2. Just, like, I don't think people, like, I know I'm not saying there's zero copies sold off of that, but I think it's the thing that people don't realize is they don't actually know how much it matters. Like, I see, even with Nintendo advertising right now, they've had, what, they had Serena Williams, didn't they, in a recent commercial. They had Awkwafina. They had Brie Larson. And I've seen some of that chatter of, like, people ragging on, like, you know, mid-2000s Nintendo for when they had a bunch of random celebrities and people made fun of it. Guess what? Mid-2000s Nintendo was super successful. it's because there's, like, they're reaching out to different markets and broader audiences. And I think, for better or worse, and maybe it's part of the reason why Nintendo might not be using kid gloves with different esports communities right now. Why they are just kind of shutting it down. Maybe they're being a little terser with it than usual, even though this is kind of consistent with how they've been for, I don't know, 150 years or whatever. If you want to see someone worse than modern Nintendo, Hiroshi Yamashi was president for a very long time.
Oh, boy. That man is savage and my hero.
Yeah, like a brilliant man who was also a son of a bitch. Yeah. Like,
incredible businessman,
but it's the kind of thing that
probably,
like,
evil.
And I'll throw in this lens through it. If you've gotten this far in the podcast, cool, thank you. But you probably know, you know, some of the history of Nintendo Report, or you're here for the first time, which I guess, you know, Nintendo Report, a short history lesson. We've been around for a very long time. We've had fits and starts over the years where maybe we have struggled getting timely review copies. There was, like, I was kind of more vocal about it at a point where it was around. There was some reporting on it out there from, like, other outlets and stuff, and people kind of weren't shy about it. I don't think I was. Like, Mario Odyssey was kind of the linchpin of that. Mm-hmm. And that was just, it was Nintendo making the decision that, you know, enthusiast press outlets like Nintendo Report and other websites weren't as important, weren't as necessary for that pre-launch coverage. And
they were also struggling with... they kept giving their games to people who would then upload them.
Yeah.
and
yeah, there would be a lot of leaks. Like, I mean, you even saw that this is something that didn't necessarily affect us, but for Pokemon, yeah, it was Sword and Shield. It wound up leaking like 10 days before because of a European outlet, and that place got sued to high hell, I'm pretty sure. But from what I heard, the fallout from that was that I think like European review code distribution got a lot tighter because they had an incident. That happened with America back around Mario Odyssey. But even with that, it's like you go through ebbs and flows where like this is the importance of the marketing for Nintendo right now. And I think it's just where Nintendo's at in 2020, like they're on top of the world. And I'm not saying that is the best form of Nintendo. Honestly, that's sometimes where I feel like they make better games when they're struggling. But their marketing focus isn't on like, we're going to deepen the hardcore right now. Like, no, they want every person and their mom, grandma, and like kid brother to play Animal Crossing, to go buy a Switch and get Mario Kart 8 Deluxe and get Breath of the Wild. Like, if you look at their commercials right now, like, it's a very pointed strategy of focusing on those kind of core properties. And you know what? Like, maybe next year, you know, whenever Metroid comes out, like, Metroid isn't going to be a family friendly game. I mean, not that it's going to be like super violent, although maybe that would be pretty cool.
That may have been why they restarted it.
Yeah. Bandai Namco is just like, what if Samus eats the heart of a Metroid?
Yeah. Bandai Namco was trying to make a Souls like.
Yeah. But like, I mean, like we will see a time where Nintendo's going to go after the hardcore more. We're going to see a time where maybe there is more of trying to figure out how to make the esports stuff work. But right now, it's just not as important. I don't know. I feel like there was a very rambly point to just be like, sometimes marketing tastes shift.
The truth is that Nintendo is a profit oriented business.
Yep.
Correct. And overall, I'd say they're pretty good at that. I am under no illusion as to what they are doing. I know that they're making a lot of money, and I know that they're doing the smart thing for that profit-oriented vision that they have.
Yeah.
I just hold the stance that we should change the messaging of public opinion to voice displeasure at that, because I do believe that there is a growing feeling online and in like people my generation that like have grown up on the internet and had access not just to many more people and more opinions, but also to many more pieces of media and art. And we're seeing the results of this ridiculous copyright system that was more or less written by Disney. Just like limiting what can be done.
I was going to say, Matt, you watched Defunct Land, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That Epcot one. Yeah. Disney sucked.
this is not great. This is not great. Let me say, I'm a hypocrite. I love going to Disney World.
Can't wait until I can go to Disney World again, man.
and also like I'm sitting here being like, wait, Nintendo's just like a terrible capitalist company as like, what's the name of our site again?
Yeah, no, it's in the title.
But I also think that you can still be critical of the things that you love.
Absolutely.
Nintendo's a very successful company. I'm not going to be stupid and say that they shouldn't be doing what they're doing. I'm going to say that we should be more outspoken about what we don't want to be okay in the hopes that this won't be a successful strategy for them. And that does mean being realistic about it, because, like I said, they're not evil. They're just a corporation. They're looking for profits.
They're by no means, I mean, a quick Google search earlier today, Sony in October shut down a company that was making custom shells for the PS5.
Yeah, they're not.
Nintendo is not the only company doing this by any means.
Yeah, even Sega. Like, let's be honest. Like,
had a phase where they were awful about it.
Sega is famous for like letting the Sonic fandom do whatever they want, but that's because they know that the Sonic fandom makes better games than they do.
Yeah, I mean, what did they do? It's Sonic Mania. Guess what?
Yeah, if Sega didn't basically need their fandom to make their games for them for Sonic, they would be just the same. Let's be honest here. They're not your friend either. So the problem here is not Nintendo. The problem is that this, the world, I'm so sorry for just making this so overtly political in episode 2 of this rebooted podcast.
I don't worry. I'm going to come in here in a second and make a really short against you point.
Okay.
Just to level things out. So we don't get, you know, too far into your radical leftist views.
My stance is not that Nintendo is evil, and it is not that we are owed anything by them. My stance is that they exist in a system that strives for profit and rewards what they are doing. So I believe that we should be cognizant of that and voice our opinion against it, so that acting in this way will be disincentivized, and in the hopes that maybe that is how the world will work in the future. But for now, I accept, obviously, Nintendo can shut down whatever tournament they want. And obviously, they don't care what I say. They are in this inherent position of power. And I am not dumb enough to think that they are actually going to change just because I'm on a podcast saying they should. And I feel like that specifically, I keep coming back and saying that specifically because I think that's something that people think that I think whenever I talk about this. It's not about getting Nintendo to listen to me. It's about...
Go sign my change.org petition.
It's not about getting Nintendo to listen to me and change their mind. I don't think that they are going to... I don't think that the big house is suddenly going to be allowed to run this Slippy tournament. But I do think that maybe in a couple years' time, it won't be the successful, profitable thing for them to do this. I think that that is possible. And that's what I want to sort of normalize, that line of thinking.
I have two issues with this. One is that they've called this thing Slippy, and now for the past month, I keep thinking there's Star Fox-related news every time somebody starts talking about this, and then it's just the dumb free Melee crowd. And then my very quick, because somebody has to be pro-capitalism, would just be that I think that... if you own something, there should not be a statute of limitations after which someone can come and take it from you.
I mean, that's not necessarily what copyright law is.
That is what copyright law is. I mean, especially if I make something and I want that to keep belonging to me and control the thing that I made, I think I have every right to continue to control the thing that I made.
But I think... I guess it just depends on the specificity of exactly what it is. But like, if you look at something like where Sherlock Holmes is at, or where The Jungle Book is at, where those are things that are in the public domain, that and I'm not
well, in Sherlock Holmes' case, only half in the public domain.
Yeah. I mean, and that's what it is. With Sherlock Holmes, like, not everything is available. Like, there are certain traits of the character that, like, can't be used in the public domain stuff because they were made. I forget the exact specificities of that, but they, like, there's some nuance to it. And I think, and I know, Matt, from when you were talking in the site Discord about this, I think there's some people talking about, like, what would be the right amount of years. And like, I think someone might've said 15, which I think is kind of way too short. Like 30 is probably aggressive, but maybe closer to the sweet spot. But like, I do kind of agree. That there's kind of a period of time where like maybe kind of let it free.
My personal opinion, and this is why I say, like, I'm a radical. Like, I'm the one that brought up the number 10. But like, that is a radical idea. I'm not going to pretend that is reasonable. That is me saying, here, if I was king, this would be the rule. But
the
30,
absolute
I think, is
minimum.
Fine.
If I was king, I would be making my own minimum. Kirby's Epic Yarn fan game right now.
The absolute minimum should be that the creator is dead. If at any point, if the creator is still alive and wants to maintain ownership of a thing that they made, they should be able to maintain ownership of a thing that they made. And I realize that gets more complicated when it comes to a company as opposed to a person.
Oh, man, imagine if all the Disney stuff just went into the wild. The man Walt died. He would be frozen.
But I mean, I think if a company owns intellectual property, they should be able to continue to own that intellectual property, especially in the case where they're paying for trademarks on it. Like,
trademarks are different. Trademarks are like a distinctly different law in my
view. But it's still the same. They're putting money into this. Like they are maintaining ownership. It's not like they just, it's not like it's just there. They're putting effort into maintaining a thing.
Well, my stance, I'm willing to talk to you about this, but it's like the more we go into this, the more it stops being video games.
Yeah,
it's just becoming politics.
This can absolutely be both of us say the thing that we think and that can be it.
Yeah.
But yeah.
On that note, I don't personally believe that copyright was made to give ownership over something forever. I do believe that it should hold long enough for you to make a fair profit and have reasonable control over this franchise if you want it to be. And we can look to the way that Sherlock Holmes works right now, where it's kind of half in public domain and half isn't, where you can see like things from the public domain books are fair game and things from later books you can't use because they're still protected. And I feel like with these long-running franchises, like if we put the number that I was thinking of earlier today was like 20 years, just for the sake of argument, let's say it's 20 years right now. You could make like a Mario game right now. You wouldn't be able to call it Super Mario Brothers because that's trademark, but you would be able to make a game with Mario, but you wouldn't be able to use like Bowser Jr. or Rosalina or anything else that's happened in the last 20 years. So you would be inherently limited by what you can do with Mario, meaning the real Mario games still belong to Nintendo as long as they're still making them. And I think that
Mario versus Bully.
And I think that as long as the quality of that original franchise is still kept up, people are always going to prefer the original creators. And we get to use this public domain world for these quote unquote spin-off ideas. Unless like you have a franchise where the official creator just totally goes off the rail and like the only stuff that people universally agree is good is like a TV series that's a spinoff that's exclusively on a streaming platform. I don't know. That's just like a weird hypothetical, but I feel like that system could open the door for more creativity while still giving enough control to the original creator to hold on to that franchise as long as they are still actively developing it. Because I believe that like once you are done actively making it, why should you be allowed to just sit on it forever and not do anything with it?
We just want you to be able to make your own Star Fox game, John. That's all.
But if I'm going to make my own Star Fox game, I'm not going to call it Star Fox because I didn't make that. And the argument that once I finish working on something, then at that point, anybody can have it. I mean, if I build a house, when I'm done building it, it's still my house. You can't have it.
But after 10 years, then everybody else can build your house.
But they can't take mine. They can make a thing like mine, but they can't make my house.
I think that there's...
And they can't come and take my house.
I think that there's only so much we can develop this without making the podcast like another 3 hours. So
no, that's totally fair.
I would love to just sit down and talk to you about this for 3 hours someday, but we're real close to the 2 hour mark already.
You're close to doing that now. Yeah.
If you've gotten this far and you'd like to see us continue this conversation, maybe we'll just let Matt and John do a whole episode together about this.
And we'll just have Matt and John talk politics.
Yeah, let us know. Connectivity
real good
at NintendoReport.com. Send us an email. Let us know if you want to see a full episode on this. Because I do, and I think what I really appreciate about our discussion now is that, like, I think we've had the time to kind of like, you know, Matt got to lay out his entire point. And I feel like it's something that, you know, whether it's Discord or whether it's Twitter, like, it's hard to just sit down and be like, yo, this is it.
You
did a good job of just kind of laying out where you're coming from and where your head's at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you are very well articulated.
Thank you. And I don't think what you're saying is insane either. Like, I understand completely where you're coming from. It's just I disagree on, like, the someone's got to lose. And I just I disagree on where I fall as to, like, what would be better overall. But I don't think like you're being greedy or insane or anything. I believe that this other system would have a net benefit.
Sure.
And that is one of the only civil civil resolutions you'll hear to a political discussion on the internet.
This was barely.
We made it, guys.
This was financial.
So, speaking of finances, are we all going to be buying games in the next month or two?
So, I was thinking about this question, and I realized that all the games that I'm looking forward to in the future are games that I've backed on Kickstarter, so I've already bought them.
So, whatever, I mean, like, yeah, we're near the end of the episode, and I just wanted to throw out, as we are in December, and, like, you know, the releases are slowing down. Like, I think the next Nintendo release on the books is February. What is it? 3D World Deluxe. Figured we'd just be like, are there any games that are either specifically dated for the next month or two or so, or likely to potentially could come out in the next month or two? Do any of you guys have any?
The two Kickstarter, I guess only one of the two that I'm looking forward to, Everspace 2, ought to be out in the next, I think, few months. I know they were initially planning to come out when Cyberpunk was coming out at one point, and then Cyberpunk got delayed beyond that, but they were already planning for 2021, so they just stuck with it. But I really like the first Everspace, and Everspace 2 from the demo they've put out for backers looks like Everspace with a bit more No Man's Sky open worldiness, and I'm super down for that. And then Exodiac, which is a Star rail Fox shooter game that looks like Star Fox. Yeah. Yep. But they didn't call it Star Fox, and that's important.
But it could use ideas that were in the Super Nintendo Star Fox now.
Right, right.
My games that I'll rattle off, they're all, I guess two of them are technically indies. The other one, maybe. Dicey Dungeons, which is a roguelike dice rolling game, mm-hmm, from Terry Cavanaugh, who did VVV. I think it's out on PC now, but it got announced for Switch at an Indie World sometime last year. I think it was actually supposed to come out over the summer, but, like, you know, COVID or whatever.
Yeah.
So I guess there's a chance that might come out soon, and I would really like to play that game because Terry Cavanaugh's games are very good and fun, and I like the art style of that. Also on the indie world road is Boyfriend Dungeon from Kit Fox Games, which is like a dating sim slash like dungeon crawl and hack and slash. I played a demo of it at PAX East, aka the last video game event ever, and correct, really, really liked it because it is like a, you know, mildly tongue in cheek but also taking it seriously dating simulator that. And also the dungeon crawling was kind of fun. And like the whole thing to it is that you are dating your weapons, like these hot men and women that you're dating transform into weapons when you're in the dungeon. And the more you use them in battle, the closer your relationship with them gets.
Really getting into that Xenoblade 2 audience.
I do appreciate that you give Xenoblade so much crap for the swords having boobs, and then just turn right around and you're like, hey, that sword's pretty handsome.
So here's the big difference is that, and this is some of, like, actually having talked to some of the thinking of Boyfriend Dungeon, which is like, there's a tongue firmly planted in cheek with Boyfriend Dungeon. With Xenoblade 2, you'll have a hard time convincing me that there isn't a handful of the development staff at Monolith that are just like, I'd boink that sword.
Are you saying that you wouldn't boink any of the swords in Boyfriend Dungeon?
I mean, I would not boink a sword.
Coward.
The difference is that the swords in Xenoblade aren't actually hot. Hot take.
Whoa.
I do like the one that, like...
All right, we were fine with the political discussion earlier, but I'm going to need you to get off my podcast right now, sir.
Like, there's just the one thing where it's like, whatever, Mithra or Pyra or whatever. I don't know. I blocked out a lot of that game from my head because it really didn't make me happy.
Do you want me to relate it to you?
I'm sitting here defending copyright, and Pyra's just plagiarized Celica from Fire Emblem Awakening. It's the same exact character design.
And to be Mithra, I guess, was the same character as, was it Paradise Lost? But it's the same artist, right?
Yeah. There's just that one scene where Sword Hottie is like getting on a rope to like go into a ship or whatever, and it's like she's not even moving and her breasts are just like jiggling like she's bouncing up and down on a trampoline. Like,
Listen,
what the physics hell
are hard, Neil. Can you program a perfect physics engine?
No, but
also, she's on the
games.
Back of a moving Titan. It would constantly be in motion, ergo, jiggle would constantly be in effect.
I forget the name of it because, once again, like I said, I put a lot of time into Xenoblade 2. Like, I really tried, man. Like, I wanted to like that
it's
game.
So good. Such a good game.
There's like that one sword that like kind of like fish-like, but it just looks like someone was like, I'm going to make someone really hot. And then like their painting got melted.
What are you talking about?
I'll have to try to dig up to see what that one was, because it's hard to explain without just getting completely offensive. But anyway, the other game I'm looking forward to is Chris Tales. Which there's a demo on the eShop. Go check it out. It's a kind of a throwback ode to JRPGs that has a really cool like time travel mechanic. So it'll be like you can go between the past and the future, and like, or I guess it's the past and the present. You go between the past and the present, you can like do things in the past that will then affect the present, and the same thing kind of works in battle as well. And it's kind of like a you know, timed battle, a timed hit battle stuff too. The demo is really, really good. I'm looking forward to the game. It was supposed to come out November of this year. It's coming out in early 2021, so hopefully it's soon. Looks fantastic. Matt, do you have any games you're looking forward to?
God, I'm in this weird spot where it's like I got more games to catch up on than I'm looking forward to. Partially because I don't really know what's coming out. I haven't been paying that close attention to non-Nintendo stuff, and Nintendo just doesn't have anything. So I think the best that I would say is probably, it's cheating because it's April, but I'm gonna say the remake of Nier Replicant.
Yeah, and we're gonna see more about that, or you already will have.
Yeah, the Switch port announcement, right? Definitely, that's definitely what.
Sure.
Nier Automata is one of my favorite games just ever made.
I should play that.
I think it is fantastic, and the original Nier is not very easy to go back and play. And I am not just talking about how it was never re-released until now. It is rough. But as a fantastic story.
Is it better on Xbox Series X?
I don't know. I don't think it's backwards compatible Xbox.
Oh.
I'm not sure. But it's a fantastic story. So I am really looking forward to getting a chance. I've watched a playthrough of it online, but I've never actually gotten to play it myself, so I'm really looking forward to that. And that's, I'm like looking at a list of other games coming out, and I don't really think I've got anything. I guess Mario 3D World.
Yeah, like I'll play that. I mean, that's we still need to find out more about that, the Bowser's Fury mode.
Yeah, we don't, which is to say anything.
Yeah.
I hope it's a mode that doesn't play anything like Mario 3D World.
That would be kind of cool.
What if it's just like what if it's just Fire Emblem?
It's a dating sim. It really was supposed to be Bowser's Fury. It is a typo.
But I think that's is that it?
I can hear everyone being tired.
Yeah.
You're lucky that I found the button on Audition to cut out silences, as everyone thinks.
But so that was Connectivity, episode 252. Thanks, Matt, for joining us. It was a really great conversation.
Thank you for making the mistake of having me.
Yeah,
we'll do it again.
You'll be back when we want to have another 2-hour episode.
Yeah, I'm good at those.
Thank you, John.
Election special.
Email us your listener mail at connectivity@nintendoreport.com. You can follow us on Twitter at @NWRConnectivity. I guess that's it. That's a show. We'll be back next week, probably talking about, I don't know, the Breath of the Wild 2 trailer. That's totally not going to be at the Game Awards.
Now that I'm done listening to this podcast, if I have to stay up late tomorrow night doing a deep dive of Actually, that sounds great.
Yeah, no, that sounds
fun. Now that you're done listening to this podcast, go listen to my podcast.
Oh, yeah. You can pimp your stuff.
Plug in your shit.
We've mentioned Joe once or twice. Me and Joe DeVader, we have a podcast called Smashterpieces, where we are playing one game for every fighter in Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, from 1984's Duck Hunt to 2019's Fire Emblem Three Houses. We are gearing up for our episode on Banjo-Tooie. Guess who that's for?
Game & Watch?
Yeah. So that's going to be real soon. I am extremely behind on playing Banjo-Tooie because I was playing Yakuza and Hyrule Warriors and then Heroes of the Storm. But that should be real soon. Neil, you were on one of those episodes.
Yeah, we were talking about Kirby 64, which is a delightful game.
And John, me and Joe decided you have to be on the episode for Star Fox Zero because someone's got to defend that poor game.
It's good.
Pretty easy. You know what? Bring Neil on, too. Let's get both the fans, the whole fan base.
I'm trying real hard to convince Joe to have repeat guests, but I made this terrible mistake where every time someone asked me to make a decision, I was just like, this is Joe's show, not really mine. And now he's
trying to get through.
Now he's taking that seriously.
All through that without any repeat guests. You're going to run up. There's more characters in Smash Bros. Than there are people on Earth.
Oh, well, we don't have a guest every episode. So,
OK.
That's just how it shakes out.
Ration them.
We are gonna. There's a point where we have four guests in a row. So,
ooh. How many years out from Star Fox Zero are we?
A while.
I mean, they're at Banjo-Tooie. That should give you.
Yeah,
Star Fox Zero is game number 74. So, I actually did the math on this a while ago, and there's no way that this is right anymore. You hold on. Let me check. You could just cut out this. Silence of me actually.
I'm not cutting out. Well, I'll cut out silence. I'm not. You think I'm actually going to edit this entire thing? Yeah. I'm going to line it all up. I'm going to load it into Premiere, tell it to shorten all silences down to a few hundred milliseconds, and I'm going to slap this puppy on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Such as the great Xbox-based podcast delivery system. I don't know if there is one.
It looks like Star Fox Zero, assuming none of the upcoming DLC fighters are from a game between 2000 and 2016. Star Fox Zero is going to be in 2024.
I might still be alive by then. Which character is
for Fox?
Are you doing them in order of when the character happened?
In release order of the video game.
So why isn't... What were the...
Star Fox 64 was Falco, and Star Fox Assault is Wolf.
Okay.
And we're playing the games in the order that the video game is released.
Oh, okay. So you didn't do the original Star Fox.
We did not.
Okay.
I believe at the time, the SNES Classic didn't exist, so we didn't have a good way to play it.
You still don't on the SNES Classic. That's a terrible way to play that game. It runs at the wrong speed.
But yeah, we also stream over at twitch.tv/NintendoWorldReport every Thursday is Smashterpieces Day at after work time, U.S. East Coast time.
The official after work time.
Yeah. Well, it's because I don't know when I'm done with work. The salary.
Yeah.
All right.
Well,
Bye, everybody.
I think the podcast ended.
Maybe.
Bye, everybody.
We can go for like 2 hours nonstop, just total full energy. And then the minute we have to end it, it's like,
Matt, walk me through your complete political ballot real quick at the end of the episode here.